I'd like to begin this evening with a little bit of a quiz for you, a little question to get you started tonight. And the question is this: what is the sole purpose of a team? What is the purpose of a team? Is the sole purpose of a team just to get things done? Sorry, I had some water before I started tonight, but I'm thirsty again. This is a statement, true or false? The sole purpose of a team is to get things done. Well, that's certainly one of the most important parts of a team, but that is actually not the sole purpose of teams. Teams are to get things done, certainly, but more than just getting things done, teams are God's way of developing us spiritually. So by working in teams and being in teams, we are developed spiritually. So we are trying to do projects and get things accomplished, but we are also trying, as we lead a team, as we use a team and interact with our teams, we're trying to develop our team members spiritually. I remember something that I learned in seminary. There was one of the professors, and I don't remember his name, but he said something to this effect. He said, God is not in the business of building great ministries. God is not in the business of building great ministries. We think that He is. We think that God is in the business of building great churches and great music ministries and great youth ministries and great parachurch ministries. But his point was that God is not in that business first and foremost. God is in the business of building great people. God is in the people building business. And when God develops us as individuals, as people, then we automatically are going to produce important, significant, and if you want to call it great ministries as well. If we don't develop individually as believers through the work of our teams, eventually the ministry that we do will fall apart. It will fall in on itself because it's going to be built on our character. Think about it for a moment. Even the ministries that we perform, the structures that we erect, the processes we perfect, the ministries we do, they're all about building people, aren't they? The interactions we have and the situations we are forced to face through the work of our team becomes a laboratory through which God builds our character. So we are in the character building business, and team activity is one way that God develops us that way. So let's look at an overview here of tonight, what we're going to talk about. We'll talk about how team activities stimulate character development. How is it that teams actually cause us, create situations where we can be refined in our character? And then we want to talk about how team leaders can manage that character development. We'll look first at the situations that arise in teams that can develop character, and then we'll look at how leaders are to manage that character development in their team members. And then finally, we're going to look at how the team leaders themselves are developed when they work to develop other people. So it's not just the team members that are developed through team activity, it's also the team leaders that are developed. And we'll look at some of the ways that team leaders are developed by working to develop their team members. So let's begin then with how team activities stimulate character development. How is it that team activities work to create opportunities for us to grow? Let's look at some of these, look at some text here for a moment. Let's look at a verse in Isaiah 48:10. If you've been in the church for any length of time, you know that God builds character through difficulties. Character development comes through life challenges. Let's look at Isaiah 48:10. Very interesting statement here. The Lord says, "Behold, I have refined you, but not as silver. I have tested you in the furnace of affliction." Behold, I have refined you, but not as silver. He's saying, I didn't actually put you in the cauldron and begin to physically burn you. The way that I developed you, as silver is developed, is I put you in a furnace of affliction. Affliction. The word affliction here means to be pressed, humbled, mishandled, or weakened. So God is saying, I am refining you. I am purifying you through this thing called affliction, by squeezing you, pushing you down, roughing you up a little bit, making you and showing you that you are weak. So affliction is any situation that causes inner stress or turmoil. Anytime we feel uncomfortable in our minds, in our hearts, in our spirits because of some situation that has developed in our lives, this is a form of affliction. Why is it that God must use affliction to perfect us? You would think that the Bible tells us what we are supposed to do. You would think that we would just automatically do it and we wouldn't have to have any great difficulties come in our lives. But we find that one of God's greatest tools in our development is affliction, is difficulty, humbling, trials, tribulations, as we often talk about. But why? Why do we have to have those? Well, let me take you through the steps here to reason out with you why He must use affliction in each of our lives. Why is it necessary and required that He does that? First of all, what affliction does is it breaks our arrogance and it opens our minds. We are so arrogant by our nature. We are so full of pride by our nature. We think we know everything. We think we've got it all figured out. We think we can determine the way out of a situation. We think we know the best way to act and carry on. So what God has to do first, before He can teach us His ways and develop us, is He has to break us. And so He has to keep beating us down lower and lower and lower until we become willing to listen. So that's the first thing that affliction does. It breaks our arrogance and then it opens our minds. And then the pain, the difficulty, the trial, especially when it goes on over some period of time, provides an incentive for us to change. We get down to the end of ourselves and we say, you know, I have tried everything I can try, and now I've got to do something different. I've got to do something outside of normal. I've got to do something other than what I think I should do in order to fix this situation, deal with this situation, find some kind of victory in this situation. And then the third thing that happens after that happens is God comes to us and He says, do this, try it this way. He teaches us from His Word. He teaches us from the pulpit. He teaches us through the ministry of others. And we see His ways and we learn His ways. And once we try them, after we're humbled and we have that incentive pushing us to try God's ways, we see that they work. And then that becomes our own conviction that God's ways are the best. And after you've been through this cycle a few times in your life, as you get older and as you've walked with the Lord longer and longer, you don't need so much breaking. You don't need so much incentive because you've learned over and over that God's ways are the best ways. So you start to do more of them on your own. There's a verse in Psalm 119. Psalm 119 has a lot of great texts in it about suffering. And on this last point here, that we become convinced that God's ways are superior. Psalm 119:71 says this, "It is good for me that I have been afflicted." Now, how many of you can say that? I tell you what, it takes a lot of maturity. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time with God to come to the point where you can say, it's good that I was afflicted. It's good that I was put in this trial. It was good that I was humbled. Why? That I may learn your statutes. Do you see the connection here? Over on the left, we've got breaking of arrogance. Then we've got incentive. And then we finally learn that God's ways are the best. And that's exactly what the psalmist is saying here. He's saying it's good for me that I was afflicted because it caused me to have to learn your statutes. And when I learn your statutes or your laws or your ways, my life gets better. It might not get better on the outside, but it gets better on the inside. And how I deal with it and how I look at it changes. And what I've learned over the course of time in my suffering is something I want to share with you now. Here's the statement. I want to talk to you about this just for a moment. The deeper our resistance, or the more profound the change targeted, the harder and longer the trial will be. Let's work through this. The deeper our resistance. Sometimes we are just not willing to listen to God. But He is not going to lose with us. He is going to keep pressing us, keep hitting us, keep hammering us until our resistance finally crumbles. Or the more profound the change targeted. The more profound the change targeted. What that means is when you're first walking with God, He is peeling away onion layers in your character. And if you've ever peeled an onion, you realize that the closer you get to the core of the onion, the harder it is to peel those layers away. So in each of us, God has been peeling these layers of character flaws and weakness away from our soul for all these years. But the deeper he's trying to reach and the more profound that change is intended to create, the more difficult and the longer the trial must be for us to get there. One of the hardest things for us to learn as Christians is how to suffer righteously, how to take a beating, take difficult times and difficult situations for many years, remain encouraged, remain fruitful, and become hardened to the attacks of the world, the attacks of Satan, all of those kinds of things. You know, if we're going to be any good to God in this culture, things are going to get worse. Pastor James talked about it today. Things are going to get worse. If we're going to be any good to God in this culture and making the changes in the churches, standing against Satan, standing against the godless in our nation, we need to become tougher, stronger, more resilient people. Well, if God is trying to work that kind of a change in you, then He is going to have to put you through something very long and very difficult. So if you or anyone in your family, someone you know, a friend, is going through a long and difficult trial, these are the two areas you need to look at. You need to look and see, are they resisting God? Are they living for God? Are they obeying God in all ways? Is there sin in their lives? Have they built their lives on sin? Or is God maybe developing them in some deeper, more profound way so that He can use them in the future? That is why affliction must be used by God to get us to change. Well, what does that have to do with the situations that we face in our teams? Team interaction and activity creates situations of difficulty. You don't have to go long in your Christian walk to realize that this is true. When we get on a team, the nursery team, the finance team, the building and grounds team, the music team, it doesn't matter. Whenever we get together with other believers and we start to interact, we start to do things, try and accomplish things, change things, move forward. It doesn't take long for those interactions to create situations of difficulty, does it? And those situations, they become minor furnaces. Those difficult situations and experiences that we have in the context of working with others, they become mini furnaces that, if we respond properly to the fire that they create, can create and develop our characters. That is how teams produce the situations for us to learn and to grow. Let me give you some examples of difficulty that team life and team interaction and team activity can produce. Let's look at some of these things. See if you recognize any of these in your own experience. When we're working on our teams in church, we're often going to focus or find difficult personalities, aren't we? People that aren't built like us. They think differently than us, and they rub us the wrong way. And so in our interactions, in our working together, we run into these situations where we meet people that if we're honest, we just can't stand them. But we know that we ought to love them, and we know that we have to learn how to work with them. So that creates these situations where we must be forced to grow. We'll talk about how we grow here in a moment. But also, when we're working in our teams and dealing with each other, we run into the weaknesses that other people have. Maybe they're just not very good at something. They're not as good at something as we are. Or maybe they're short-tempered. Maybe they get mad quickly, and that creates a difficult situation for us. Or maybe they're not on time, or maybe they're lazy. Maybe they just don't want to do any work. And so once you get on that team and you start working with those people, you realize these weaknesses, and that causes you difficulty. It causes you stress and anxiety. What do I do? How do I respond? In teams, interacting with others, we also end up recognizing our own faults. God manifests through that team activity. Maybe He manifests our temper. Maybe He manifests that we think more of ourselves than we ought to. Maybe He manifests that we are not very good at forgiving others, or that we hold others to a standard that we don't hold ourselves to. You see, we start to see a mirror forming in this group activity that makes it difficult for us. We have to face those faults, face those weaknesses, and deal with them. We're challenged in teams also, if you've got a good team leader and even good team members, you're going to be challenged to raise your own performance. That there are going to be other people on that team that are saying, hey, what are we doing here? Let's get this going. Let's get this done. And so maybe you're used to being in a church or in a team or on a committee that basically just laissez-faire, just whatever. We just, you know, do whatever we want to do and no real urgency, no real standard. And then you get on a standard with someone, team with someone who's, you know, really about getting things done, and you realize you've got to step it up. So you've got to grow. You've got to perform. You've got to do more. You see, that creates an affliction for you. It creates a difficulty for you. And then teams also create situations where we have to talk to other people. You know, communicating is so very difficult for human beings. It is hard to talk to people, especially when you get into a situation where you're angry, where something goes wrong, any of these. You've got a difficult personality, someone has a weakness, you see your own fault. All of these situations, you have to learn to talk to people. When someone offends you, you have to learn how to express that to them in a loving, patient, and understanding way. When someone has made you mad, you have to give them the chance to tell you what they were thinking and why they did that. It is so incredibly difficult to do that. So you can see here that team activity produces those afflictions that Isaiah talked about. Behold, I have refined you in the furnace of affliction. All of these ways here are little furnaces of affliction that provide us with the opportunity to grow. So let's move now and let's talk about how team leaders, the whole concept of this series is to talk about leading a team. So we've established that team activity and interaction creates these many furnaces that can develop our character. So if you are then a team leader, how do you manage this development of character when these things come up? Let's talk about this. Team leadership, if you're a leader of a team, you are an unofficial pastor to that team. Now, I don't mean that you're an elder and that doesn't elevate you to the position of elder, pastor, overseer. But in a small way, in an unofficial capacity, you are like a pastor to that team. You are shepherding those team members. And so as difficulties arise in your team, and you're recognizing those difficulties that we've already talked about here a slide or two ago, then you have to help your members, the team members, navigate those issues, navigate that trial, that affliction, and their response to it in a biblical way. In other words, in a way that Christ would be pleased with, in a way that Christ Himself would do that. So that's sort of what how you need to look at yourself if you are a team leader. So let me give you the two things that a team leader must do to in order to shepherd his or her people through these trials and afflictions so that they are challenged to grow in their character. The first is a team leader must recognize the growth situations as they arise. You have to recognize the situation when it presents itself. Problems, complaints, failures, conflict, and any other negative development in group life should not be viewed as unwanted intruders into the ministry. They should be seen as they truly are from God's perspective. Expected opportunities to develop individual disciples. For example, a team member who is constantly late, what opportunity for growth does that team member have? Spiritual growth. Well, that team member has an opportunity to grow in promise keeping because that team member agreed to be there at a certain time and to participate in the activities of the team in a responsible way. Therefore, they must be there. That's a promise. But if I'm tardy, if I'm always late, the opportunity to grow is in promise keeping. What if I have a couple of team members who have a tiff? They have a conflict. They come to church one day and something happens and they kind of go at it with one another. They lose their tempers and kind of fly off the handle at one another. Well, what opportunities does that situation create for those team members to grow? Well, it provides an opportunity to love our enemies, doesn't it? Because we're looking at that person, obviously, at that moment, as an enemy. So Jesus said to love your enemies, do good to those who despitefully treat you. So we have an opportunity to do that, don't we? What about the opportunity to communicate and listen? If there's a fight going on between two members in the church, somebody's not listening, and somebody's not talking, somebody's not communicating. We have a major communication breakdown. So much of the time when we have conflicts in the church and people start arguing, when you get it all worked out, what you're going to find is both of the parties jump to conclusions. They didn't listen. They didn't actually find out what was going on. They got in the flesh. They got angry, and they started plugging their ears. And they didn't care what the other person said. They really don't care what is the truth. They only want to win now. And that's in the flesh, brothers and sisters, and that is a very dangerous place to be. But it gives you an opportunity to communicate. It gives you an opportunity to go to an offender and discuss a fault, doesn't it? Now, I'll tell you from personal experiences, that is one of the most difficult things that there is to do. When somebody makes you mad, hurts your feelings, rubs you the wrong way, to go to them in love and mention the issue and talk to them about it is so difficult. But it is so important, and it has so many benefits to the kingdom. And then it gives you the chance to seek and grant forgiveness. So you see all of these things that can be learned from conflict. What if you get a call from a team member? Somebody calls you, you're the team leader, and they call you on the phone. And they're sharing a complaint about some other team member. What opportunities are presented there? Now that happens a lot. We call and vent. It presents an opportunity not to grow in not assuming evil, right? Not assuming evil of the other party's motives, but that's what we do. We assume that that person's done something wrong, but we can learn from that. It presents us an opportunity to recognize our own personal pride. We can reflect and see that we're the ones that are getting that have the pride here. It presents an opportunity for us to pray for others, and it presents an opportunity for us to control our own gossip. You see, so there are all of these opportunities to grow here in these team situations that come up. A team leader then must change his perspective. This is very important. A team leader must change his perspective and begin to expect and welcome these growth opportunities. Yes, welcome someone showing up on time, late. Welcome someone having a conflict. Welcome someone gossiping. Not because it in and of itself is good, because it was already there anyway, and God is simply manifesting it through the interaction on the team and giving you an opportunity as a leader to do something about it. We need to begin to expect and welcome these growth opportunities instead of dreading and avoiding them. So the first thing a leader must do is recognize the growth situations as they arise. Now, what's the second thing? Well, the second thing, we're going to get to that in just a moment. The second thing is we have to act on it. But I want to present here, I want to slip in between these two points. I want to slip in something that every leader, team or pastor or otherwise, needs to know. That in every situation that you encounter with your team and your team members, it is always about the person first. It is always about loving this person, encouraging this person, directing this person, developing this person. We're not in leadership to use others to get things done, in the sense using them negatively, just kind of taking from them, getting them to work, and then pushing them off to the side. That is not what team leadership or Christian leadership is about. We want to get things done through people, yes. We want to push and challenge people to perform and to live up to Christ's standard, yes. But the most important thing is that person. That's why you'll notice usually when I talk to individuals, I talk to anybody on a team, if I'm having a conference call, anything I'm doing with church members, I know James and Ollie are this way too, the first thing I always ask is, how are you doing? Or I try to get to that. How are you doing? Tell me about your life. Tell me about how you're feeling. Are you encouraged? Are you discouraged? How do you feel? It's always about the person first. The ministry is second. The work that we have to do is second. So we have to look at, as we recognize the spiritual issues that are manifested in our teams, and as we move forward to try and help them be corrected, we have to keep in mind that the first thing we want to do is care for these people, love these people, genuinely be interested in these people, put their life, their issues, their situations first, and the work of the ministry second. Always people first in your leadership. So once the leader himself recognizes that we have the issues that are arising, the second thing that he must do is he must help the member see the situation for what it really is. This is where the shepherding part comes in. You have to begin to help the people deal with the issues that are being manifested through their teams. The leader cannot take the easy way out. The team leader cannot take the easy way out. He cannot ignore the issue. If someone calls you gossiping, you cannot ignore that issue. If somebody is having a conflict and showing anger and being irate with another team member, you cannot ignore that. That must be addressed. You cannot become discouraged by these things. Remember, you change your attitude, the way you're thinking, where you're expecting and welcoming these challenging situations because they're opportunities to be developed. You can't use it as a justification to quit. So many people get into a leadership and a team, and people start disagreeing, people start gossiping, they start doing the things that people always do, and the team leader says, "I don't want to do this, I didn't sign up for this." Well, actually you did. When you took a leadership position, a team leader, you did sign up for that. And what does it reveal about your character that you want to quit so easily? We'll talk about that here in a moment, how it develops the leaders. And you can't pass the buck to someone else. You can't push it off on pastor, deal with this. Now, there are times when pastors need to be involved, no question about it. But in the day-to-day working of our teams, we have to begin to do that shepherding work ourselves. Having recognized the issue, the leader must engage the team member with the truth of what he sees with his spiritual insight. So we have to start talking to them about what we are seeing. Let's take this example of gossip, which comes up very, very often in churches and in groups and teams. Let's say that someone calls you, and you're a team leader, and this someone calls you, and this is what they say. Here's the situation. Here's what they say. "Jimmy Bob was so rude to Mary Sue this morning when we were doing the food ministry to the homeless. I'll tell you what, I'm not going to work with him anymore." That's what this person calls you and says. Now, what are the spiritual issues that are manifested by that? Well, there are a number of them, but first of all, it's gossip, isn't it? What is the appropriate response for the leader? How about this? Is this the appropriate response? "I know exactly what you mean. I'm really sorry. I'll make sure you aren't scheduled to work with him anymore." Is that it? Just totally skip around the problem. Just make sure these people don't work together anymore and let it go at that. Is that going to solve the problem? Let me ask you, if you do that, what's going to happen the next time they don't get along? What happens when this person goes and works with another person and they have a problem again? You see, that's why we have to deal with the issues that our people are manifesting. We cannot just overlook them. Is this what Christ would do? Would he just reschedule and try and avoid it? No. Why? Because this conduct is not consistent with his word and will not help either disciple grow. The appropriate response is to help the believer see what spiritual issues this has exposed in them. And let me show you some examples here of what this might be exposing. Here are three verses that apply in different ways to this sort of made-up scenario, but very realistic scenario. Here's what you could say. You could say, "Are you sure you heard the whole conversation?" Remember, Jimmy Bob says, Jimmy Bob was rude to Mary Sue this morning, said something ugly to her. All right, Proverbs 18:13 says, "He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is his folly and shame." In other words, we're not to jump to conclusions. We're to make sure we've heard everything. Are you sure you heard the whole conversation? The second way you could approach this is from Matthew 18:15. And you could say, "Did you talk to Jimmy Bob about it?" That's almost the first thing I always do. If somebody calls me telling me about someone else, I'll say, have you talked to them about it? Matthew 18:15 says, if a brother has offended you, you are to go to him and him alone and reveal his fault. And if he repents, you have gained a brother. So you're not to go. You're not supposed to call your team leader and say, so-and-so did so-and-so. Nope. You, if you see sin, if you see something that offends you, in love and patience and gentleness, after much prayer, you must go talk to that person about it and no one else. And then you can ask, did you pray for them? Matthew 5:44, Jesus says, love your enemies. Love your enemies. So those are three appropriate responses to this situation from a leadership standpoint. This is the way a leader could respond to it. But I want to take one of these and let's look at this one that I said I use most often. And let me guide you through how I would deal with this, how I might talk to this person that had called me, just to give you an example of how you might approach it. So the person calls me and says, so-and-so did so-and-so, and is kind of gossiping about it. I would say, did you talk to them about it yet? Okay? Here's what I would say. Appreciate you making me aware of the situation. I'm sorry this happened. Were you able to talk to Jimmy Bob about it? You see, I'm pushing back and saying you need to go talk to that other person. More than likely, here's the answer you're going to get. No, I haven't. All right, are we going to take Jesus' command seriously or are we not? Are we going to live up to what his standards are or are we not? So this is where the leader has to be able to turn it around and push back. Here's what you got to do. You've got to acknowledge and show empathy. You acknowledge the issue and the situation, and you show empathy. I understand. Then you ask about the spiritual issue. You explain why it's important that you address it spiritually and biblically. And then you ask them to do the right thing. So let me go on here. Here's what I would say. I appreciate you making me aware of the situation. That's acknowledging it. I'm sorry this happened. That's empathy, and you are. You don't want this to happen. This isn't something that you want to happen to your team members, but it does happen, right? Were you able to talk to Jimmy about it? That's asking about the spiritual issue, right? No, I haven't, not yet. So here, let me. This is how I would explain it and ask him to do the right thing, these last two parts of this approach. The reason this is important that you go talk to Jimmy Bob about it and not to anyone else, is to keep the issue from spreading beyond just the two of you. You see, you explain things. You don't just tell people what to do. You tell them why, so that it becomes their conviction. We don't want a bigger problem to develop from this, do we? It will also give you a chance to hear his side of the story. Remember what we talked about from Proverbs 18:13? Maybe there's something you don't know that was going on. It also will let him know his behavior is hurting others. He may not even know he is doing this. So, do you think you could find the time to speak with him? See, I'm asking them to go and to address it with that person. So you have to, as a team leader, you have to become spiritually sensitive to what's going on with your team members and recognize the spiritual situations that come up. And then you have to help guide them into the appropriate response. Now, they're not always going to do what you say. People are hard-headed and people are hard-hearted. And when they get in the flesh and they get mad, sometimes they're not going to do what you say. And if that's the case, we're going to talk a little bit later about talking to your pastor or pastors about this and getting their help. When I say that, you're not to push this issue off on someone else, I don't mean that you can never seek counsel. Of course you want to seek counsel. But I'm saying that it is our responsibility as leaders to do things about these situations as they manifest themselves. So then finally, how are team leaders developed through developing others? How are team leaders developed through developing others? You know, sometimes it's true of management when people think about managers, people being promoted into management. And it's also true about leadership, people being promoted into leadership positions. Leadership is not the place we go when we have no growing left to do. In other words, just because your pastors think you're worthy to become a team leader, that doesn't mean that they believe that it is even true, in fact, that you have no growing left to do. Leadership is not a call to stop growing. It is a call and a responsibility to grow in even deeper, more profound, and more productive ways. You are going to be challenged to grow so much as a team leader, because not only do you have to practice good spiritual character, you also have to grow to the place where you can help influence others to develop their own character. And it is very difficult. It requires a tremendous amount of growth on the part of the leader. Team activity and interaction not only challenges the team member to grow, it also challenges the leader. Let's go back to this gossip situation here, and let's just continue to build on this example. What growth is required for this team leader to execute on what I talked about just a moment ago, to recognize the spiritual issues, not to quit or pass the buck to someone else, to bring it up with that member and team member and help them see and motivate them and move them towards doing the right thing? What growth is required there? Well, hopefully you can see there's a tremendous amount of growth that's required to do that. So let's look at some examples of this. Scriptural knowledge. How is it that this leader is going to recognize these issues if he or she does not know God's Word? So a leader is going to be challenged to grow in their knowledge and application of God's Word in order to help other people recognize and do the biblical, the right, the Christ-like thing. Do you see that? So you're not going to stop growing in your scriptural knowledge. You're going to have to increase it. Think about the growth that's required for you to challenge someone else to obey. How hard must it be to say, "Hey, brother, I appreciate you calling me. Have you talked to that other person yet?" No. Well, right there, it's going to be really hard to take that next step and say, "Brother, the Word says that we are to go to others when they offend us, and it's important because of this and this and this and this. When can you go talk to them?" That's the right thing to do. You see, that takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of prayer. It takes a lot of growth. Empathy and concern. We talked about it earlier, and I said that the person is first. Well, you might not be a kind of person who's lovey-dovey and touchy-feely, and when someone else is hurting or down or whatever, you don't have that kind of compassion gene. But as a leader, you have to develop that compassion gene. Even if you don't feel it so emotionally, you still have to carry it out and execute, show concern, pray for someone else, be concerned about them. I mean, I'll confess to you, I'm not the most lovey-dovey, emotional kind of person. I'm much more black and white, and I've found over the years that relationships are important to me, but I can let them come and go. I don't have to have everybody like me and that kind of thing. But what I've had to develop is a concern for people because Christ told me to love them. So I am going to show love to them even if I don't feel it so emotionally at that moment. So I have to grow. I've had to grow in doing that. And love is as much an action as it is a feeling. So we have to grow there. Prayer for others. We need to pray for our team members, and as we see these things develop, as we see the potential disasters that could take place when people start fighting among one another and gossiping, and we know the harm that it does to the kingdom, it should cause us to pray more, to seek Christ more, to truly bring them before God and ask for Him to change them, to give us wisdom and strength. Teach us the Scriptures. Help us to be bold enough and courageous enough to challenge them. Help us to grow in our empathy and concern for others. We must grow in our prayers. If you're a team leader and you're not praying very much, I encourage you to do that. You're not fulfilling all of your responsibilities, and you're not going to be able to lead as well as you would like to. And then encouraging those who are disheartened. A lot of times, when our people show spiritual immaturity, when they get angry, when they say something that's not nice, when they don't show up when they promise to, when they don't keep their commitments, you know, whatever it is, it could be a million things. It's something else going on in their lives. And that's why I say you've always got to look at the person first. Hey, what's going on? Are you okay? And you have to become someone who encourages people. You know, your team members, more than likely, they're all volunteers. They're giving up their time to do this. In an already busy, hectic schedule, they've got responsibilities at home, they've got responsibilities at work, they may have sick parents, sick relatives, sick husband, sick wife, they may have health issues themselves. You have to grow in being able to encourage people and lift them up and support them as they're trying to help you and your other team members work together and get things done. And again, as we see from Isaiah 48, what are these situations? They are simply little furnaces that God is using to develop the leader, not just the individual team members. So we have to recognize those spiritual issues, and then we have to address them with our team members, and as we go, we must be growing as well. I'll leave you with this thought of team leadership and trying to develop others through the activity and interactions of your team. You are going to need help in this, and that is what your pastors are for. If you have a situation come up in your team and you are immediately not certain biblically what you should do, or even if you think you know what you should do, seek the counsel and advice of your pastor and your spiritual leaders. Go to your pastor. Go to Pastor James. Brother Ollie and myself, we're both ordained ministers, and we've got a lot of experience in these situations. And we, by God's grace, we have a good understanding of the Word. We can give you the right advice to help guide you. I'm not suggesting that you don't get advice. I'm suggesting that you don't pass it off to someone else to do it. But what, call Pastor James, call me, call Ollie. This is the situation. It's not gossip. If we are leaders and we are trying to solve a problem in ministry, we all know when we're talking about other people in the context of ministry that we're not gossiping, we're not going to let that go anywhere else. But you've got to go and say, this is the situation, what do you think I should do? Never jump off the cuff. If you get angry, if you get upset with one of your team members, never just go off and do something. Always get their some other counsel. Proverbs 12:15 says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise." Be careful what kind of counsel you're getting, brothers and sisters, on any issue. If somebody's telling you what you want to hear, that's probably not the advice you need. If somebody's encouraging you in your flesh to continue in a conflict, to continue in an issue, continue down the wrong path, don't listen to that counsel. Go to people that you know are going to tell you what you don't want to hear. That's where you need to be getting your counsel. And as a team leader, seek the advice of your pastor and your spiritual leaders so that you can grow by their discipleship of you as you engage in team leadership.